Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, everyone. Being able to educate your board is one of the most important ways for a leader to build strong relationships and foster a positive and productive culture between board members and their executive director. Run by leadership expert Mark Buzan, the Nonprofit Board Summit provides outstanding know-how, resources, and tips for leaders looking to step up and unlock the full potential of their endeavors. If you're a nonprofit executive director looking to build a stronger board, visit nonprofitboardsummit.org/EDS. Or if you are a board member looking to make more of an impact, visit nonprofitboardsummit.org. The Nonprofit Board Summit runs from February 26th through the 28th. I'll hope to see you there. Hey, welcome to the show. I'm sitting here with Sarah Locarno, and we're going to do something a little bit different today. She's not a nonprofit leader, not a business leader, not a consultant. She's actually a participant in one of the programs that Veterans for Life USA had to offer. We've got all these different points of view and different inputs, but we haven't had anyone on the show yet that's been a participant in the program. So Sarah's going to help us walk through that a little bit today. But before we get started, I wanted to mention, drop a little nugget in here, a little plug for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance, the mastermind group. If you are struggling in your nonprofit, if you feel overwhelmed, if you don't feel like you have anything to talk to, sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance. Join a group of other like-minded nonprofit leaders, and we're going to help you get through whatever struggle you're dealing with. We'll make sure your fundraising goes up, and we'll help you run your organization all the much smoother. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for asking, and thank you for having me here. It's a good day, and I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. And as we get further into this conversation, I think our listeners will find out why that's definitely true. How did you find out about Veterans for Life USA, and how did you get involved?
Well, I was going through a pretty dark time. You know, I've actually been going through a pretty dark time since I was about 16. But the way that I was brought up, you know, you don't show that there's anything wrong with you. I didn't realize just how much that I had going on until after I had got to treatment. But I found out about transformations through a friend of mine who I had sent a text to when I was at work one day, and I had drank too much the night before, which was a pretty common thing. I was going to work, felt like crap pretty much 100% of the time. And I was at work one day, and something just clicked in me. And I said, you know, I don't know that I can keep doing this. I need to do something. I don't know what that thing is, but I need to do something, or I don't know how much more that I can keep doing this. And so I sent a friend a text, and just in a very nonchalant way, you know, because I didn't want to let her know that there was anything wrong or that I was trying to ask for help, even though inside my head, I'm like, somebody, please just help me. I don't know how to help me. Somebody just help me. So, you know, in a roundabout way, I told her I didn't know what to do. She said, hold that thought. And she got back to me about 15 minutes after the fact. And she said, hey, so here's the deal. There's this guy. His name is Brian Paul. He knows that you're going to be calling. All you have to do is call. That's all you have to do. Mm-hmm. And so I said, all right. And I called him right then and there. I had no clue who this guy was. And so when I called him, you know, I'm still trying to be really tough at this point. And it didn't take long for everything to just kind of start spilling out. And I pretty much broke down, and I sobbed to him about work type things. I thought it had to do more with work initially. Come to find out that a lot of the things that I was having to deal with didn't have anything to do with work. But so I just kind of cried to him, and he said, all right, well, let me make a few calls. And I'd say within an hour and a half, I had talked to a few more folks. Some of them were from transformations, and in less than 2 hours, we had it all set up to where, all right, this is where we're going to send you to. We've got everything lined up. All you have to do is get on a plane and get here. And I just can't help but think, man, I mean, that it just went so smooth, that it just felt like, I don't know, that everything was falling into place, if that makes sense. So I jumped on a plane and I went there, and now I'm back, and I still can't really put into words what that place has done.
And I think that's what it's all about, right? You have an organization that puts together a program. They have a mission that they care about, and they were able to connect you to their services and provide help. And I love Brian. I've been friends with Brian for years. He's actually been a guest on the show already. And I got the chance to meet Sarah. I got the chance to meet you at the Warrior Challenge earlier this year, which was just phenomenal, where you shared your full story and really the darkest places of that thing. But I mean, this is what it's all about. This is what people start nonprofits. This is why people have a mission, something they really care about. And that's really providing the services that you need to be effective and actually help the cause that you want to help. And I think that you're a great example of connecting with that program and actually, you know, going all out and making sure that you're getting the benefits from it and actually using it and making a difference. And I know you're a first responder, and COVID's probably been as tough, if not tougher, on my friends on the front lines. I've got a friend, Kelly, here locally. She is super worn out. She's a paramedic in the Oklahoma City area here, and she is just wore the heck out from all the different calls. But you know, going through a program like this, it really changes your perspective on the people that you're helping. Was that your experience?
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, my perspective, well, I should say the mindset that I had of the people that we were running these calls on. I would be lying if I said that there would just be an instant, oh, well, you're a weak piece of shit because you can't be tough and you can't deal with your stuff and all of this other stuff. I would be lying if I didn't say that that's the mindset that I had. And now, after going through all of that and coming back home, my compassion has definitely come back. When you're on that side of things, it's just incredible how much my perspective regarding that has shifted. And I don't think I really don't think that I would have learned that any other place other than where I was at. So that being said, our calls are always going to be the same in regards to some people are not going to treat you the way that you want to be. Life is not going to go according to how you want it to. There are still going to be people that call 911, they call you and they ask for help. And so we expect them to be grateful, not to be like, yeah, I don't know, I guess treat us like crap. And the really awesome thing too that I thought of was that transformations had taught me the tools to not take things personally. To not take someone's really bad day and to take that to heart. And so that feels really, really nice too, to not, you know, feel so pissed off all the time when someone calls you something that you don't like, or they try to hit you or kick you or spit on you or everything. It's just really nice not to take that to heart.
Oh, absolutely. And you see that in the nonprofit space, right? You see organizations that are going out and trying to help feed or clothe the homeless. And some of them are just not interested in the help that you have to provide. Think about the volunteers of an organization, the volunteers that work so hard for us day in and day out and could use some reminders of, you know, why we're doing the mission and reminded of the good work that they're doing and saying thank yous. And sometimes you're just in a bad mood. And I know if you're listening to this and you've been watching the news at all, it is really easy to start taking things personal when you have a different viewpoint than someone else. But these are tools that we're not taught. We're not taught these in high school. We're not taught these in grade school. We're not taught these in college. And until we experience some area of this for ourselves, it's hard even to understand. You know, as an active duty member, you get sent out and you go to places and they're not sure how to receive you because you're military in a uniform. But the military that's in their country really does not act very professionally. They take it out on the local populace or they do whatever they want to do without really any kind of repercussions. So you see us show up in a uniform. They're not sure if we're going to be true to the Constitution and the oath that we took, or if we're going to behave the same way as their military members. And to your point, you know, getting a call of distress from someone in need of help, if you get on the mental health side and they know they need help, but they're not okay with you giving them the help and they might fight back. And those are terrifying things. And a lot of who I've talked to in, especially, you know, the veteran service organization world, you have so many people that are dealing with this trauma and trying to understand, you know, how to get past this things, how to forgive the people involved, especially to forgive ourselves. And we were never taught the tools of how to deal with these kind of things. So there's nothing wrong with asking for help. Asking for help doesn't mean that you're helpless. And you nonprofit leaders that are listening right now, I'm going to say that again for you. Asking for help doesn't mean you're helpless. It means that you simply haven't learned the tools you need to handle the situation you've been faced with. And there's nothing wrong with that. I didn't always know how to be a fantastic podcaster and, you know, take that seriously or not seriously. Because my first couple of interviews were awful. But since I've been doing it over time, I've gained the confidence and the skills that I need to be comfortable behind the camera, behind the microphone, and do these interviews. I wasn't just born with these skills. You had to learn them. And it's the same with dealing with your own stuff, your own junk, trying to keep your cool when someone's trying to rip your head off, either verbally or literally. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with reaching out for help.
It took me a long time to get to that point. But to me, there wasn't really any other choice. I don't know how much lower that I could have gone. So yeah, to me, there wasn't really a choice. I had to do something. So
you got to that rock bottom for you and you said, no more, I've had enough and I'm going to move forward. You know, I mentioned a few times in other episodes that I grew up and I moved around a lot. And what that really meant was that I was living with my mom who had mental health problems. And every time she needed treatment, my sister and I would have to go live somewhere else, whether that be with a family member or in a foster home. Sometimes we were together, sometimes we were apart. And that takes a toll on you. Just moving, I think I heard recently, is the third most traumatic experience of someone's life. Well, I've moved 50 times. I've been traumatized more times than years I've been on the planet. And some people handle that quite well and some people do not. Some people are ready to roll with the change and roll with the proverbial punches and some people are not. And you know, in this time of, I think this is going to be released in January sometime, you know, we're almost a year into COVID at this point. And some people are in school and some people are not in school. Some people are hosting college. Sometimes it's only online. Some people are back in work full time and some people are commuting from the desk. And those with the ability to change and roll through the punches are the ones that are going to be successful. But if you have something in your life that's jamming up the internal workings of your mental or emotional well-being, you can't roll with the punches. You can't make these moves and you can't do what you need to do. And that's why I really wanted to do this interview with Sarah, is not so much that it's going to give you the actionable steps to build a stronger nonprofit, like we say in the intro, but understanding why you're doing your mission and reinvigorating your staff and your board and your volunteers on why this is so important, and is to help people like Sarah, if that is your mission that you're focused on, is to help the people that you're trying to help and make sure that they give something that's that's worth a shit. There's nothing like coming up with a program that doesn't really help anybody, but it makes you feel better. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure that people have the tools that they need, the housing that they need, the clothes that they need, the food that they need, the mental health help that they need, or maybe it's conserving a park or a lake or a mountain range, or maybe it's taking care of animals. Whatever your mission is, you must understand that at the end of what you're doing is someone that's going to be receiving those services, and how vital it is to remember that for you and your staff. Sarah, what's been the best part of life after receiving services?
I feel, I don't know that throughout my entire life that I have ever felt a sense of peace. When I was in treatment, there seriously was not a day that went by that I didn't find a deeper level of peace in some way, shape, or form. That being said, there was not one day that I didn't cry while I was there. Crying was something that I was not allowed to do. And so, you know, at first it really was uncomfortable, you know, because I had been so used to just shutting down how I felt because I was made to feel as though I couldn't express it. And so when I would cry, like, you know, man, it just felt so damn good. And, you know, more importantly, they encouraged it. They said that, hey, it's okay to cry. If you're not crying, we're not doing something right. Or yeah, and so, you know, that just felt good for somebody to, I don't know, hear me and see me and say, hey, guess what? It's okay to feel. It's okay to feel. That that is something that I'm still trying to get used to. I haven't felt in such a long, long time because I've just kind of numbed everything down with how much that I used to drink. I didn't realize at the time that that's what I was doing, but I'm still getting used to how it feels. So if I have an off day and I feel like I feel myself getting upset or pissed off or this or that, this is where that whole perspective shift comes in. And honestly, it was the second to the last day before I went home, and they have these classes that you can pick and choose from, you know, and they told us, if you see a class on here and it's something that you don't really want to go to, you should probably go do it. So there were a couple of classes in there that I was like, man, I really don't want to go to this one. I don't think it has anything. I don't think that I can apply it within myself. But the one class that stood out the most, and this is what has brought me so much peace, is it was a class on perception. I think that class was only about an hour and a half. But man, when I walked out of there, I was mind blown at just the perspective that I used to have. And then you go into this perception class and it's put into another perspective that you never even really thought of like, oh man, I've never really thought to think about life like this or just that sort of thing. And that class was probably the most beneficial, and I'm really glad that I made myself go to that one. I mean, just my whole perception, I mean, in all aspects of life and just the things that I went through, has just changed. And it sounds really cliche to say that I just walked into this class and I walk out and, oh, I'm cured. Like I've got life solved, you know? I mean, but that's really kind of how it felt. But I will say this newfound sense of peace that I have had, and I'm going to tell you where this starts, because you can take any class that you want to that can, you know, where they teach you the, you know, tools and the different mindset to try to have. But the one thing that you need to do first, I don't think anything else is going to fall into place. I don't think anything else is going to click until you can look deep inside yourself, see all of the stuff that you have gone through, that self-hate that we all tend to feel that we try to kill by the drugs that we do, by the drinking that we do. You know, we don't even know that that's what we're trying to do. All we know is that we just hate ourselves so much and we just don't want to feel it. We just don't want to feel it. And it's really important to get down to the root of it. Before you do anything else, the most important step, you have to forgive yourself. You have to dig deep, look at all the stuff that you have done wrong, or man, you've really just got to forgive yourself. You have to let that go. The forgiveness class was also one that was a option to choose from. And I was like, forgiveness? Like, you know, no, absolutely not. I've got all of my shit straight. I don't need to, you know, I'm solid. Well, I made myself go in and I walked into that classroom. And that was really my first, I'm just going to call it like my first crying dump. What they had us do was, you know, they had us write a letter forgive someone that has caused you harm. You know, there it's, you know, if you can let that go, or if you can forgive someone, that will help to bring that peace in that you are trying to feel. And so I sat there and I was trying to think of like, well, who could I forgive? You know, like who, you know, and then I just kind of put my pen down, and it turns out that I was unconsciously really wanting to forgive myself for beating myself up for some choices that I had made in my teens, and just the way that I dealt with life, which was to drink. I just put my pen down, and we were only supposed to write like, I think it was 200 words. And next thing I know, I mean, I've got a whole book, you know. And then it came to the point where they were like, is there anybody that would like to share? And so I was just like, yeah, man, like I am on a roll. Why stop now? So I start to read this, and this was the first time that I had cried. And I start to read this out loud, and it's to myself. And it really hit me just how much I really just did not like myself. I mean, I had no clue. And it felt so good to get that out. And then it was after that that things really just started to fall into place more. And because I got rid of all of that self-hate, or more so because I forgave myself, that opened up the doors to start receiving more information on how to rebuild from that point of like, all right, I am a crying mess and I forgave myself. Now what?
Well, that's a great place to jump into some conversation there. Cause what I heard is that you weren't being heard, you weren't being seen. And it wasn't until you really self-evaluated that you were able to start healing and forgiving yourself. And those that are in the nonprofit world, especially the startups, especially the solo shops, you are all killing yourself for your cause. You're not taking a salary. You're not setting aside time for self-healing and self-care. And we're recording this the week that Sonia Chavez came out and talked about listening to your body and taking care of yourself. And I'm recording this with Sarah after just recording with Lane, which should have been Lane Ballone should have been last week. And we talked about understanding who you are as a person and what your strengths and weaknesses might be. And I mean, I call it zone of genius. There's things that I rock at, and there's areas of my life like I just know that I need someone else to do that because I just suck at it. It's not for me. And I ain't got the time to work on that crap. I'd rather work on the stuff that's going to, you know, take me to that next level. But, you know, those of you listening, think about the stuff that Sarah shared with us and how that might apply to you in your life. Are you not doing fundraising a certain way to not pay yourself because you don't think you're worth investing in? Are you not setting aside money and funds to get a coach, to get more instruction, to do continuing education, to learn the things you don't know, to actually help you do your nonprofit work better? Are you avoiding hiring on or getting a volunteer because you are too concerned with holding on to the reins because it has to be you that's doing this? Or can you bring someone in that's going to help? You know, they're going to have strengths where you have weaknesses, and you're going to be able to build it, and it's going to grow exponentially because you finally get someone in that's going to help take you along on your journey. How much better is it to work with someone and you bounce ideas off each other, and then one of you is a thinker and the other one's the doer, and then all of a sudden you've got this thing going and rolling? It is so much better than going, all right, laptop, we've got to do a post today. How are we going to do this thing? And, oh, well, I'm on the laptop. I might as well check my email anyway. Oh, I definitely have to get back to those people. And I knew I should have returned that call by now. And all of a sudden, it's the end of the day, and you haven't written the post or the thing that you've wanted to do because you're doing it all on your own. Take the time. Get into a group, my group or someone else's group. Get a mentor. Get a coach, even if it's not me, and find someone to bounce ideas off of so that you can talk and they can actually hear you and listen and figure out where you need to go next. Because sometimes the answers aren't within us. Sometimes we need that external stimulation. You know, I don't have to be told a whole lot of things. Yeah, but you know, occasionally I have to be reminded. Like, hey, I know I don't have to tell you that, you know, Friday is garbage day, but it's Thursday at midnight. And, you know, just a reminder, you might want to bring out the trash cans. Something as simple as that, that someone else could help you out with. That's what we all need sometimes. I know I've been there. I know Sarah's been there. And you listening to this, if you're honest with yourself, you know you've been there too, and you might be there right now. Isn't it powerful when we actually take a step back, get some new information, maybe get outside our comfort zone a little bit and really dive deep into something that really needs to be done? I'm sure you are a better emergency medical tech now than you were before. You said your compassion's up. It sounds like your energy up. That probably means that your focus is up and you're able to deliver better services now than you were before because you don't have all that internal stuff holding you back.
So when I first started this line of work, you know, it's actually kind of funny to look at all of these new folks that we hire at work, because, you know, I swear they all look like they're 12 and I feel old now. But it's just fun to see them. And when they first come in, you know, they're like, all right, I'm going to go save the world. I'm going to, you know, solve all of the world's problems, if I can talk. And the old me, I'm not going to lie, man, the old me, when I was really burnt out, would kind of be like, dude, like, go do something else. It's not worth it. Like, this is crap. Like, this is your, you know,
it was the cynical side of you. It was the cynical side.
It was my burnout side. It was the out of touch with myself side. It definitely. That being said, you know, that really just kind of stems back to the fact that, and I really hate to say it, but I'm going to say it, people who call 911 for help, this might be something that you might have to take out, but I'm just going to say it. Okay. So I think the issue that I started to have is, it seems to me, my perception of it, I love this word, I use it all the time now. My old perception was that, you know, 80% of people that call 911 don't need us. They need to make an appointment with their doctor. They need to go to a clinic. They don't need an ambulance for a sore thumb that they've had for you know, 6 months, you know, you start to run those types of calls all of the time. And your sense of, I guess you could call it purpose, is gone. It's like, it's just kind of like, you know, I don't feel like I'm making a difference anymore. Now, that sounds a little unfair to say, because I mean, you know, hell, someone's sore thumb could be the worst thing that they've ever had to deal with. And that's why that they are there, is to help them through like the worst day of their life. But then you want to add on to the known fact as well, that I don't know what gets in people's heads, that when they call 911 and we show up and they want to treat us like crap and they think that that's okay, and they tell us to just shut up and do our jobs. And, you know, and so that part too, I mean, that part was really starting to affect just every aspect of my work, like my work life. And when I first got into this job, I mean, I was very much like all of these new kids now that I see coming through. And I will also say that I have known from a very, very young age, since I was maybe about 8, that I wanted to do this type of work. I actually got hooked on it. I don't know if you remember the show Rescue 911. And I used to watch that. And, you know, I've just known from that young age. And so when we're having to deal with all of these external factors that really to do with us, that's their bad day. It's not ours, right? But we tend to take that to heart, because if you're in this line of work, hopefully it's because you care, you know, hopefully it's because you want to help and make someone feel better. And when you have that taken away from you, or when you feel like somebody is taking that from you, you get burnt out real, real quick. And your compassion, it just drops. I mean, it just drops. You start to treat everybody the same. And like I was saying before, like, I mean, that's not fair to them.
Yeah, I know what you're trying to
it's
say.
Just, I kind of forgot where I was going with all of this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's
and so now, go ahead.
It's, you know, it's joining the military, and you get in and you want to make a difference, and you want to serve, and you start fixing airplanes, but you don't see what happens with the airplane. When the airplane goes out, it leaves with bombs, and it comes back, it doesn't have any. So you're in the process, and you're part of the system that's doing good things and helping, but you don't get to see what it is that you're doing. And now, you know, the airplane that I fly in now is nuclear deterrence. And thank God I never get to see the fruit of my labor. Like, we don't have any nuclear war to deal with. Isn't that wonderful? But it's not very job fulfilling, because you don't see the effect that you're having. You just say, oh, another day without nukes. Great. And it doesn't make you feel anything. It is completely necessary. It's very vital. But man, it is just not sexy at all. And like, my wife works as a pharmacy tech, and she deals a lot with what you do. She has people that go in there and they're cranky, and they're there to get the medicine to make them feel better, because they're experiencing some of the worst days and the worst times of their lives. And it's not, you know, the technician's fault that the drugs aren't ready because of the doctor faxed it to the wrong pharmacy or whatever happened, but they're in a lot of pain and they need what my wife has. So in order to make sure they remember who she is and who they are, they don't always treat her the best. And it's hard to remember that as the people that you're, you know, interacting with that are, you know, giving you a hard time, or they're just frustrated with their situation in general, and you just happen to be there. It's hard not to take that personally. And I can picture this translating into just about every position in the nonprofit world, whether you're busting your tail as executive director and you go talk to the board, and your board's like, well, we really don't feel like you've been doing the kind of job that we thought you should be doing. And you are completely wiped out because you're giving everything you absolutely can to help move the cause forward, to take care of the programs and take care of the staff and the volunteers. And, you know, you working your butt off doesn't necessarily have a direct correlation to their perception of what it is that you're doing. And it's very easy to get bogged down, and it's super hard to pour from an empty cup, because every time you give a little bit more of yourself, a little bit more of yourself, and pretty soon you keep tipping that cup over, but nothing's coming out. And so you take the time to take care of yourself, to recharge, to reevaluate, maybe gain a new perspective or get new tools to handle those things. It is really tough to continue on, whether you're doing good things in the nonprofit world, where you're serving your country, or you're helping the community by running emergency services. It is tough, and it's easy to get worn down, especially if you don't communicate and talk about the things that are jamming you up on the inside.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with what you just said. The whole police, fire, just our whole trifecta, that whole sense of that you feel like you can't go and talk about any of the issues that you have. They don't teach the burnout like in school. They don't teach you, like what you were just saying, they don't teach you that it's important to keep your own cup full. If you don't do that, you're not going to have enough to, you know, be there for the people that need you, you know, when they call 911. And unfortunately, that is not something that is taught in school. There's kind of this unspoken assumption that says that we're all supposed to be solid and have our stuff all together, you know, because we're the help, you know, they call us for help. They see us as, you know, we can fix things. We can be calm in times of just, you know, where any normal person might just be like, oh my God, like what is going on? And we're held up so high that they forget. I think some people forget that we are people too, and we feel things. And, you know, when we don't feel anymore, you know, that comes from the fact that we feel like that we can't talk about those sort of things, because if you do, we're supposed to be tough. We're supposed to be tough. We're seen as we can solve everything. And a lot of us too, we have that mindset of, all right, well, I can fix this guy and I can fix this girl and I can, you know, help solve this and that. And I can do what I need to do. And I don't know if people just have that assumption that if we can fix everybody else, that we can fix ourselves. That is so not true at all. That is so not true. I would really like to think that, but it's not true.
We all would. But what would you tell someone that's experiencing what you're experiencing? What would you say to encourage them to seek a solution or a resolution to what they're experiencing? What would you tell these people?
I don't know really that I can put into words, like in a simple solution type of way to go about doing that, just because there is such a stigma on people in our professions asking for help in the first place. I will continue with that thought and say that I have, in a nonchalant way, have brought up my issues and my struggles with the person, with the hospital that I work for. And the responses that I have gotten have just been, you know, well, go work out at the gym, you know, do this or do that. You know, like, I don't feel like I was being seen or heard at all. I don't think that workplaces generally take it very seriously. I will also say this. I got a letter from my workplace saying that they were not going to help pay for the treatment that I had gone to, right? Because I was not deemed, and I'm just saying this in my own words, but I was not deemed enough of a drunk or far along enough in my depression for it to be deemed as medically necessary for them to pay for it. And
you that's know, something that I struggle with. What I would say is, if you're experiencing this stuff, that you can't get past it on your own. And if you can't get past it on your own, there's nothing wrong with it, but then you have to go and do something about it. And it might be contacting Brian Paul at Veterans for Life and connecting to one of his partners so you can get treatment. It might be contacting any of the number of, you might be contacting Hick Strong to get counseling on the side that they do virtually that they pay for. These are things that you can do that won't affect your work, that won't affect your medical record, and you could take paid vacation or paid leave and go do some of these things that are available to you, but there's no benefit to toughing it out. It does not make you stronger when you don't have the tools to deal with it. I grew up in a household where mental health was the topic of the day every day because I had to evaluate who my mother was as a person and was she experiencing any symptoms and was that going to put myself and my sister in harm's way. The same way with, you know, leading a team in the military, you have to be able to evaluate your people and their state of mind. We have programs, aviation in the nuclear world are much bigger on these programs because you have to maintain the clearance and you have to maintain your ability to work with nuclear weapons. So you have to bring those things up and you have to take a time out to make sure you can do those things because they're not going to have you fly if you're not okay with your finances or your, things aren't going well with your spouse or you had a death in the family or you're struggling with a substance of choice. They want you to be able to do the job. They spent millions of dollars training you. They're going to give you the time necessary to take a time out to handle your stuff so you can actually do your job that you're trying to do and do it well. And it's the same with the police and it's the same with fire. And there's ways to do this through something like Reboot Combat Recovery, which is a class for military. And they have another program for first responders because people are understanding that this stuff is affecting, you know, people that went and fought in war in Iraq and Afghanistan and people that went to Vietnam and Korea. People are understanding of those things that then happened, but realize that people that do first responder stuff, they see this stuff far more often than someone that went to war. They might be going to war every single day of the week and they come upon a car wreck or someone that's on a substance that's going to do them personal physical harm or some other ungodly thing that we're probably not going to bring up. It is okay and encouraged to seek help with what you are struggling with. You can't take care of your family. You can't take care of yourself. You definitely can't provide services if this stuff is gumming you up and causing problems. But I got to thank you so much for being on the show today, Sarah. Do you have something else you want to add?
Well, I was going to go back to that question that you asked me. So there is how I would tell somebody to go about doing that. And I know it's going to be hard because it was very, very hard. It was very, very hard for me to do, but
was it worth
to ask for help? Oh God. Yes. 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 I don't know how else to say it other than yes. But the thing that you're going to have to do though, before, you know, like, that man, you're just gonna have to like swallow some pride and just accept the fact that you are asking for help. You know, it took me a long time to really soak in what I was being told as far as, you know, oh, you're stronger if you ask for help. Like that's real strength. And you know, I didn't see it like that for a long time. So I think something that's important that you have to do if you are going to ask for help, you have to be prepared and accept that you're going to have to let go a little bit of your pride. You know, people in this profession, we are all very prideful. You know, this goes back to the whole being tough and, you know, there isn't anything that can hurt us. And, there's definitely a good amount of pride that needs to be swallowed. But I will say, once you do that, though, I mean, just in that act right there, you're going to see how good that I don't know. It just felt so good to make that call and not care that I was just crying to some guy that I didn't know. Like, I already felt better from that point on. And then you do that, and it just seems like everything else just kind of fell into place. You know, and because I swallowed that pride, I was able to go and get that help. And kind of like what I was saying earlier, is that I was able to forgive myself, which opened up all of these other doors. And if you just keep staying true to yourself and you keep your cup full, you know, there's not really an end in sight. I don't think we're going to wake up one day and be like, oh, I'm cured. And, you know, it doesn't work that way. And, you know, it still takes work every day to maintain that peace that you feel. And a lot of people, once they obtain that peace, they think, oh, well, I feel good. I don't have to keep trying. I don't have to still check in with myself to see how I'm doing. No, that kind of stuff takes work every single day. You have to be doing something to maintain that, because life is still going to go down. Life is still going to throw things at you. And if you just don't keep tabs on yourself, you know, you might slip back into that really dark place. And I know how I felt, and I sure as hell don't want to go back there. That was a really dark, dark place, and I wouldn't trade anything that I went through. I wish that I would have done it way before I did, but I'm really glad, though, that I did. And yeah.
Well, hey, Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing some of the behind the scenes and what it might look like as someone actually participates in the programs we create as nonprofits. And I know Brian just sings your praises all the time when I talk to Brian, and he's so happy and so proud of what you've done. If someone wants to get a hold of you after listening to this episode, where can they contact you?
I have an email. I have a cell phone number. You can call me. You can text me. Brian has actually put me in touch with a couple of folks that were going through a hard time themselves, that were actually being sent to the same place that I had gone through. And he had put me in contact with them to just kind of chat with them and allow them to share any thoughts, any questions that they had about anything, just to kind of take the fear of the unknown from that whole thing. Because if you haven't ever been through anything like that, it is a scary thing, like when you don't know what to expect. And so if I can help anybody just kind of clear the air about how things are done, or just any questions that anybody has, I mean, I've got my phone on me all of the time. You know, day, night, anybody just wants to chat. Man, I'm here. I'm so here.
We'll have that email and that phone number for Sarah in the show notes. Feel free to check that out and give her a ring. Thanks again, Sarah.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Being able to educate your board is one of the most important ways for a leader to build strong relationships and foster a positive and productive culture between board members and their executive director. Run by leadership expert Mark Buzan, the Nonprofit Board Summit provides outstanding know-how, resources, and tips for leaders looking to step up and unlock the full potential of their endeavors. If you're a nonprofit executive director looking to build a stronger board, visit nonprofitboardsummit.org/EDS. Or if you are a board member looking to make more of an impact, visit nonprofitboardsummit.org. The Nonprofit Board Summit runs from February 26th through the 28th. I'll hope to see you there.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.